W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Welcome to the Gridiron Show, show two of the week. And today we're going to look back at the International Series decision actually a little bit more, because Alistair Kirkwood, the managing director of NFL UK, is going to join us. We're also going to be talking about Monday Night Football, the Jeff Fisher firing, and looking a bit back at the last slate of games. Maybe a little look forward to Thursday Night Football as well. This is the Gridiron Show. So hello, welcome to the Gridiron Show. Will Gavin, Ollie Hunter, sat in the front room recording a new show.
Yeah, man.
You've got a headset now, so you can actually hear what's going on. So when I do things like this, you know that I've done them.
I know that you've done it, yeah. It's great.
It's all the evolution. It's all the improvement and gradual Billy Big Bollocksing of my entire house. I'm just going to turn it into one big radio show.
Yeah, indeed.
you're listening to the Gridiron Show. We obviously put out a show yesterday for the International Series announcement for the four games. If you've not heard that one yet, it's worth going back and having a listen to. I included our chat with Neil Reynolds, which we talked about the 5 months thing. We talked about the lack of dates and times. And, me and Ollie kind of gave our reaction to the games. Further reaction kind of from Twitter, etc., has been a kind of combination of positives and negatives taken from it, from what I've seen. And most people actually have been pretty positive on it. You've just got some big naysayers who don't like it being the Browns, who don't like it being, you know, my team's not here, so I'm not happy about it, seems to be the thing. And I kind of believe that if you take that exact same slate of games, but for the Browns, you'd given them the Packers on the road, which is a game this year, or the Seahawks on the road if they'd had that game, and the whole slate of games, people would be going, oh my God, that looks like an amazing slate of games, because they've got that one big team that they wanted to see. And I just think it's been all been a bit harsh that it's been treated with such negativity.
I tell you what, if the Cardinals hadn't have been so bad this year, then people would have been thinking about that in the same respect.
If it was the Cardinals of last season, which I do think that team is still in there.
So do I, yeah. I agree with you. So I totally agree with what you said there. I've got it on a pretty good source that the NFL UK, the International Series makers, they wanted the Packers to come over. The Browns said no. Now, you flagged up on Twitter, at Will Gav, a really interesting article about how Green Bay won't give up a home game and teams won't give up a home game against Green Bay because that's when they sell out. Shad Khan said that it was the biggest amount of revenue they've ever taken, was the Jacksonville Green Bay victory the first game of the season that we all thought was going to be the one that was going to come over last year, was going to be announced last year to come over this year, and it wasn't. So for people, those naysayers, I don't think I think that we're very inclusive on this show for people that are just coming to the game, for people that have been looking at and been involved and watching the game for years upon years. Actually, the people that don't understand how this type of things, these things work, I think those are the ones that are naysaying about it. It's very difficult, and we'll hear from Alistair Kirkwood, and he'll explain exactly how difficult it is to get teams over here to the UK, what they have to give up, the amount of money that they have to put in, the amount of money that they lose, the hassle, the palaver. It may even be down to the fact that a head coach just doesn't fancy it.
Yeah, and I do think I do think that you referenced that article, the Packers article in particular. Jason Wild wrote this one. Mark Murphy, the Packers president, talked about it, and he said that they want to come over. There's no way they give up a home game because it is the smallest economic market in the NFL. So the amount of money that a home game for a sellout home game brings that area versus anywhere else is a huge percentage compared to, say, the percentage you bring to New York for a Giants game or whatever. And then, as you said, Shad Khan said no last year. And in fact, I think the exact quote was in here. Shad Khan, I called him last year. I've gotten to know him. He's a really good guy. I really like him. Shad, you know, we'd really like to play you in London. And he said, Mark, there's no way in hell I'm moving your Packers game to London.
That's the Browns owner speaking.
No, this is Shad Khan.
No. But who's Mark? Who's he speaking to?
Mark Murphy is the Packers owner.
The Packers owner. Yeah. Okay, fine.
Shad Khan being the Jags owner.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we played them. I saw them on the field. And he said, Mark, we set a revenue record today. So, as you said, it is... It's always going to be difficult to get those teams over, but I do think it will happen. My belief is that, and yes, you had in Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold, when we sat down with them the other day, Neil said that he believes we'll have a franchise before all 32 teams make it out here. He said there's some teams who just aren't positive on it, etc. But the Packers seem to be very positive on coming over and playing here. And
well, I think
it's the financial is the big issue. Teams are already, NFL UK, it's not well publicised, but they make a big loss from these games. Mm. And the money, that obviously filters down from the office, and it's all about the long-term growth and the merchandise and everything, but they have to pay a flat fee for the teams to coming out. Then they give the ticket revenue to the teams and a percentage of the merchandise revenue to the teams. And, you know, for a team like the Browns, they make more money off a trip to Wembley than they'd ever make off a home game against the sort of an opposition like the Vikings. So that sort of thing is huge for them. So what it's going to take is the Packers being on the road at, say, someone like, I think it would need to be a team like the Chargers jumps out to me because they've already got three home games a year in a really competitive division. Mm. You know, when you talk about Broncos, Raiders, Chiefs, those are all great games. So taking your fourth great game away isn't as big a deal, but then have to throw millions of dollars at them to get them to agree to do it.
Yeah.
I think that will happen eventually because I think the fan base will almost demand it. Let's hear from. I might be, or drop in another bit of the Reynolds and thingy interview here.
I mean, you do love it.
It was really good fun, and we will release it in full at some point. What we're going to hear from the guys here is discussing the kickoff times and the reaction to the move away from earlier kickoffs, which have proved very popular with fans here, and the take on that time slot. And then we'll hear from the managing director of NFL UK, Alistair Kirkwood, on the announcement of these games, and further to the conversation we had with Neil, dates, times, all that other information as well. Okay?
The lunchtime kickoffs do three things, and two are really important, and one sort of less so for me for this market. The first one is it gets the teams in and out. So the teams can get in and they can get out that night. They can be home. Like you said, they're ready for their next week. Number two, mostly, I've seen younger fans coming into the sport. You know, stand on the stage at the tailgates. The young
biggest fans, feedback we've had is I won't be able to bring my kids
my family,
to the 6 p.m.
And families are a big part of those stadiums now. And that's your future. You know, that's going to be the future fans. So the third one is it allows you to play a game and air a game in prime time in the Far East. I mean, that doesn't really affect what we do here in the UK, though, but that's another aspect of it.
New York are happier with that, though. So
yeah, they are. Yeah, so you keep you service the mothership. But I think what this conversation, and I know from, I tried, before I went on Sky last week, I tried to get some clarity on that. Those kickoff times aren't set yet. You know, there was a leak from New York that they want to move them all back, but I think there's still a kind of discussion that's being had between NFL UK and NFL New York because they want to they still like those lunchtime kickoffs. Yeah. They would rather play locally at lunchtime, but I think what's happened, looking at it from the outside, I think that's a reaction to the, you know, the narrative of the year in America has been that TV ratings are down.
Do you know what I've loved actually about that whole thing, though, has been
we're talking about the idea of going on Twitter and defending it. And yes, I went out there and I kind of banged the drum that I like the early kickoffs and for the reasons why. But what's been funny is seeing people, American journalists, American writers who understand and actually have them defend why it works. And it's seeing Greg Rosenthal say, well, hold on, you're putting on 12 Thursday night games of incredibly varying quality because teams are on a short week.
Yeah.
If we're looking at saturation, why aren't we talking about that?
Right.
Why are we talking about three games a year being played at a slightly earlier hour?
There's a game. There's a game this week, the Dolphins and Jets on a Saturday night. You know, I mean, you could point. Yeah, and if you were only looking to find three examples or four examples, you could find them easily, and you wouldn't have to be looking at London.
Are you saying people weren't tuning in for Matt Moore versus Bryce Petty? Is
quality. Gone are the days of Dan Marino.
Yeah, I mean, you put Raiders Chiefs on a short week, and that's a
division decider.
Division decider. That's a huge rival game, and you put on. I unscientific feedback from the early kickoffs across the ocean was fans liked them because it was another game they could get
it's
to
a day
watch.
Of football, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was almost a case of, I remember when they first announced them, people tried to find any excuse. You know, you had people trying to turn up church groups to bang on the table and say, you shouldn't be watching football in the morning, you should be going to church. You know, it was absolutely anything they could find to say why it was a bad idea. Yeah. When it actually happened, it worked. And
Neil hit it right on the head from a purely football standpoint. You're talking about the coaches and the get in, play the game, get on a plane and get home. And so, because here's the reality of the coaching world, right? Those coaches are working that 5 hours on the way back. Everybody's got their laptop open, players too, and they're grading film already. So that's 5 hours of work they're getting. So it's not like they're sitting on a plane and now we got to go in the office and break the film down afterwards. They're actually using that time. So when you put them back on what would be a quote normal week schedule in the NFL, I don't see there's any reason why playing over here can be used as an excuse.
I like the lunchtime kickoffs.
Yeah. It feels to me about too much has been made about TV ratings in the NFL when it's kind of a society thing. People don't watch as much TV.
That absolutely fascinates me because so much negative energy in the media back in North America about, you know, television ratings, the NFL's television ratings, the NFL's. Let me tell you something. They ain't losing money.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. And it's, you guys know, because it's, this generation is cable cutters, right? They're not watching football on TV. They're watching it on YouTube and all the other platforms that they have to watch the game and talk about the game. The game is at its zenith in terms of interest in the game, fan interest in the game.
Absolutely.
Why do you think the salary cap's going up again? Mm. Right?
Yeah, it's not like they're cutting corners.
Absolutely. Mm. I just wanted to touch on the international market. So obviously you mentioned China. We've had a game in Mexico this year. There's talk of other games in China. Brazil's been mentioned. Mark Waller said at the Super Bowl last year he sees that as a completely separate entity to the London aspect of the international series. Is that sort of your view as well?
Yeah, I've just finished writing an article on the sort of international growth for the Super Bowl program that's going to be out in America. And I spoke to Mark about that again. And I think they're two different things. Mm. I think every time we see a game given to Mexico or whether it's Germany or Brazil, wherever it may be, we shouldn't view that as, well, that's one less we were getting in the UK. They're completely separate as far as I can see. I think Mexico was a success this year. I think they had some challenges with
The phrase logistical nightmare was thrown around.
That's the words that I was thinking of using. I thought I'd stay politically correct. But, you know, since we're sitting in the...
You're allowed to do that.
Sitting in the NFL boardroom.
We're not here to challenge you, Neil. What are we here to do?
Playing a mile and a half above Denver might be a challenge for players. Getting in and out of Mexico City. So they had some issues. But I think, speaking to Mark when I wrote this article, he was like looking at what's gone on around the NFL. Mm. And he was saying Germany and Canada would be next. That's the plan. They still like the idea of Brazil, I think. I think they what London gives them is a kind of a safe receiver on third down that is going to pick up the first down. Do you like that, Jeff?
Yes, that's good.
Possession, it, no?
Possession receiver.
Possession receiver.
I'm using that right now. I'm quoting
London is Julian Edelman. and Brazil will be Odell Beckham.
No, Ted Ginn.
Ted Ginn. Yeah. Well, drop it at the end.
You might drop it, but it's going to be good if it hits.
Yeah. And we want to be there.
Do you ever see another country having four games a year and having the same level of success that London's had?
I think at the moment, I still think there's... at the start, we kind of said that Germany was happy with whatever they got. But I think still when the game started and the party ended, the fans in Germany were fantastic.
Yeah.
It was a great atmosphere. They were really into it. They loved it. I could see something happening there. I mean, Jeff works in Canada all the time. Canada. I guess to me, Canada always feels like it's sort of, you know, it's the safer one for America because it's right next door.
Well, I have Canadian family, and I've been out to BC Lions games, and I've been out in Vancouver, and the Seattle Seahawks are a much bigger team in Vancouver than the BC Lions are, and maybe will ever be again from this point forward. So NFL, they already buy into it in a very big way. So they see it. It's just the Bills games didn't work very well.
Yeah,
so.
And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of reasons why they didn't work very well. Because if you think about it, and I don't know if the phenomenon is quite as strong in Vancouver, but I know for a fact that I think it's over a quarter of the Bills season ticket holders are Southern Ontario fans. So the logical thought process was put Bills games in Toronto and grow it that way. But the reality of it was, and I think this is one of the things they would have an issue with if Vancouver's as a site for a game, you got to get across the border, right? Now you have to have a passport to go to the game. Right. Even though you're U.S., it's 45 minutes or an hour to Toronto, right? 45 miles or whatever it is. So you got to have a passport to go. And that means your kids got to have a passport to go. In both of those stadiums, there's absolutely no tailgate area. Right. So it's a antiseptic environment. And so if you're a football fan, you don't get the game day thing that you get here. I think one of the pushbacks I've heard about Twickenham is that the game day environment around the stadium without as much tailgate area and
food opportunity,
all of that stuff has to factor into the game being successful.
Do you know what's really funny about Twickenham is that everyone I've spoken to who has gone out to games in the US has said it felt more like a game in America than the atmosphere does at Wembley. Huh. Like, actually, the fact that, yes, there was less stuff, but there were in the same way they have with the rugby, where there's the food stalls on the walk down the kind of, it's the area around it, not just you're not going just to the stadium. Almost that travelling there felt like part of the experience. And, okay, I understand because it's an older stadium, the seats aren't as comfortable and as big, and Wembley. We were a bit spoilt with Wembley, let's be honest, because it's top two, three stadiums in the world.
It could be a Lambeau Field. They haven't even got backs on their seats. Yeah, exactly. I mean, so it's, at least you've got a back to your seat. But, I think there's no doubt the NFL wants to be back there, and because they have more opportunities, the more stadiums they have.
Yeah.
The more games they can bring over, so they will have. I'm sure they will have gone to Twickenham with a laundry list of this is what needs to be improved, and this is the standard that we're used to because we are the NFL. And I think going back to your original question, I think at the moment, I think the focus will be on pushing a potential franchise over the line here, and then once that's in place, then you have that confidence to go out and play more games around the world. But I think Germany could definitely see more games.
Who'd have said they have four here ever?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Right.
Crazy.
So for us to think that this can't be repeated somewhere else in the world is, let's not make that same mistake that everybody made when they put a game here.
Mm. So Neil Reynolds, Jeff Reinbold and Liam Blackburn, a bit more on the games here in the UK. We did an extended, it was a 90-minute long chat that we had with the guys, and we'll bring that out as a full podcast probably in the off-season. But if you want more, we are doing a very special NFL A Decade in the UK edition of Gridiron Magazine. Go and subscribe at gridiron-magazine.com. But in more reference to the announcements this week and the arrangements of dates, times and everything else, I caught up with Alistair Kerr, Kirkwood, the managing director of NFL UK, earlier on today. And when I spoke with him, we started off by discussing the rather hectic 24 hours he's had around these announcements.
It's been fairly hectic, but probably not as hectic as trying to actually get the games arranged. There's never been a year where it's been a straightforward process anyway. There's lots of ins and outs. And even your crystal ball gazing will look to be wide of the mark a few times in the last couple of weeks. And that's just the nature of the beast, because getting games agreed is not as it's not as two-dimensional as it's probably it would appear on the outside. There are a whole bunch of stakeholders. So, for example, people won't necessarily be aware that U.S. networks are a key consideration in how we go about trying to decide things. So, you need to invariably try and get a split between Fox and CBS games. You need to be working through how that impacts potentially on the schedule, given that our games, alongside Super Bowl, have historically been the only things that get confirmed before April. And so therefore the schedule kind of fits around us, and teams, whether they want late bye weeks, early bye weeks, those types of considerations, head coaches, because they're usually one of the last ones in the decision-making chain to be asked as to kind of how they feel about stuff. So there's loads of things that go into it, and there's usually some curveballs that go on. So the actual release of information in some ways is a release to me, because that actually then means we can then start working on it properly. Whereas in the build-up to it, you never quite know until you actually can release it whether it's going to be the way it is.
It's interesting that you mentioned the decision-making process and the teams and everything there, because I don't know if you've seen a very interesting article from ESPN about Green Bay not coming to London, and the fact that Mark Murphy has spoken about that he spoke with Shahid Khan last year and said to him, "We'd like to play you in London." And Shahid Khan said, "Well, no, that's our biggest revenue game of the year. We're not necessarily going to give up that game, because whilst they're committed to London, they've got to consider their fan bases and everything else." And I know that there were a lot of fans when the Browns, there were rumours being leaked they were going to play, who were hopeful Green Bay would be a team out here. But it just really showed to me how complicated that decision-making process is.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably over the decade, there's been four occasions that come to mind where we think we could have got the Packers and we didn't. As an example, I mean, there's loads of other examples as well behind the scenes. I think the challenge, ultimately, when you've done as many games as we've done, is making sure that we as a nation of fans, if you like, don't get kind of too complacent on how challenging it is to ask teams to give up home games. Because, you know, the more games that you play, the more, from the outside looking in, it would appear to be easy. And it's kind of intuitive that you assume that if you've played that many games that everybody is fully on board and the process must be easier.
Yeah.
Actually, ironically, the more games you play in a year, the more complex it becomes. So when we were playing one game a year, whilst the identity of the games could keep changing or other things could have actually happened, it's still one game. And you announce the game and people make a decision as to whether they like it or not. When you play multiple games, by its very nature, with all the stakeholders involved and the variety of lens that people need to look at, including the one that you just gave as an example, where home teams need to balance the advantages of coming over with any kind of perceived disadvantages, and they need to kind of protect their own interests as well. And that's absolutely fair, because they're the ones that are actually creating the sacrifice. The danger, I think, from a perception perspective, is that people then assume that A, it's a straightforward process, and that B, perception of what might be attractive games, or let's say big name franchises coming over, should actually be easier, whereas actually the more you play, arguably in some years, the more difficult it is. I think the second piece is that you're kind of beholden to the schedule, so you'll know, because you're close enough to it. But a lot of people that are less close to it won't necessarily realize that the schedules are kind of dictated 3 or 4 years in advance. Mm. And so you know 7 out of the 8 teams that teams are slated to play.
Yeah.
3 of which are divisional rivalries. Then you then have 4 others, and then the final one is decided after after the season ends, based on where you are in the standings. So
of course, and then we have that game last year where we actually went on that basis. It was the Rams on this year, wasn't it? Where we knew it was going to be which division, as it were.
Yes, yeah, and to be honest, that was a call that I made that the Rams agreed to, because NFC East, they're all kind of attractive teams, right?
Yeah, guaranteed a big name, as it were.
Yeah, so we got lucky in regards to that. But if you've got a team that's willing to put its hand up and give up a home game, you're playing with the cards that you're dealt with. It's not even that sometimes the team is sitting there going, we need, we don't want to offer you up these games. It's actually maybe those are just the games that they've got for that season. So you use the example Cleveland. They had Green Bay and they had Minnesota, so you know those two. But then if you look at the others, from memory's sake, I think they had Jacksonville, so you'd have to make a decision. Do you want them as a home and an away team? You had Tennessee, and you had AFC East, which 4 or 5 weeks ago, when we were in real deep talks, that could just as easily have been Miami, which would then have been another home and away team. So there's a lot of complexity and forecasting where you're trying to have certain principles in place. You'd like to have new teams that haven't come over, and you'd like to ideally avoid having teams that are playing more than once in a season.
I'm intrigued as well with that, Alistair, and this is kind of final one from me, and we can get into the historical stuff with Liam, but obviously the big reaction from the announcement yesterday has been the fact that, great, we've got 4 games, 8 teams, 3 new teams, there's all those fantastic headlines, but not knowing the exact dates of the games and not knowing the kickoff times at this point, kind of hearing from you about the complexity, it becomes clearer as to why that would be. But do we have any kind of timetable for when we will know the set dates and kickoff times? And was what went into the decision to announce the games before you did know that information, to kind of get the right balance between making sure people had enough time to know but didn't have every scrap of information they could, as it were?
Yeah, well, it kind of goes back, Will, to what I said at the start, which is when you're playing one game a year, it's not that significant in the grand scheme of things, so you can probably get away with, we're going to play this in week 7, and then the schedulers work around you. Mm. Once you go to 4 games, that's 8 teams where their schedules and their flexibility kind of are fixed around London, because unless you're Indianapolis this year, choosing not to have a bye week, not only do you fix the first one, you also then fix the second week. Arguably, in some cases, you also fix the week before, because teams may put in a request to have a home game, or if they're a West Coast team, they might want to be on the East Coast prior to coming to London. So there'll be requests going in. So if you're the scheduler, who's under a whole lot of other pressures from everywhere else, including the 32 teams, as to what a fair schedule looks like, you might look at the London date and go, you're already fixing 3 weeks out of a 17-week schedule, and you're actually doing that for eight teams. So you're making my job substantially more difficult, whilst, you know, recognizing that we'll want it for other reasons. So I recognize and appreciate that it's not a brilliant comm strategy. It's not ideal from a fan-facing perspective. You want to get all the information out as much as you can. Worst case scenario is that we don't know till the schedule comes out in April. Better case scenario is that we continue to have ongoing conversations internally and try and get to kind of agreement as to what we can get comfortable with. And I have genuinely no sense as to whether that's something that can happen in the next week or two, or takes a lot longer, or we have to wait till April. And that's just purely because of the complexity, as well as how it actually impacts other things. So it's an internal process. Now, the reason why I prefer to go out and announce whatever we got is a recognition that, first of all, it's always better to be out there in season rather than out of season. You guys will know from what you work on that whilst we have incredibly passionate fans, as a sport, we go relatively dark in off-season.
Yeah, of course.
With the exception of the draft. And so, therefore, you lose an awful lot of impetus if the later that you leave it. So that's the first thing. We're going out solely with season tickets at this stage. And so our viewpoint is, if you know that it's weeks 3, 4, 7, and 8, and you're a season ticket holder that wants to renew, or you're looking to upgrade and become a season ticket holder, then at least knowing the weekends should give you a fairly good idea as to whether that's something you want to proceed with doing. If you're a single ticket buyer, you're obviously not going to find yourself in a situation where not knowing which weekend it is that you can then commit, which is why we're not going on sale with single tickets till we actually are able to announce everything. All of that being said, is if you think about it from a US point of view, if you are a Philadelphia Eagles fan, you may know the team matchups, but you don't know when the games are through the season until April. So if you look at it from US eyes, what I called our worst case scenario is actually standardized with what everybody else does in the States. Now, we're slightly different, but I'm more kind of just giving you a sense of as to the type of conversations that we'll have internally.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. Thank you, Alistair. Really appreciate that. I'll now allow Liam to crack on with the rest of the stuff. Thank you for answering my kind of newsier questions for me.
Did I pass the smell test, Will?
Of course, absolutely. Alistair, always do, yeah. Always do.
Oh dear.
No. The fact is that from my opinion, I spend these 2 days kind of not firefighting on Twitter, but trying to say to people, look, there is a very justifiable reason for all of these things, and you. Like, you should understand why that is, and I just think people they've had it so good for so many years that they're expectant at this point. But to discuss that, I'll let Liam crack on now. And
before we go on to Liam, the only other thing that I say is that every single year we've ever done an announcement, with the exception of the very first game, we've always disappointed more people than we've excited. Because statistically, if you got more fans of other teams than however many teams are involved, so their starting point will be, why is it not my team? So you kind of go in, first of all, knowing that whilst it's exciting, there'll also be some disappointment. The second piece is, you'll also realize that there's probably then two or three cooling off days, periods, where people then kind of will hopefully sit back and look at things. What I would say about these matchups is that we don't have what might be classically called a powerhouse franchise. And there's always going to be years where we'll have that, and there'll also be other years where we punch above our weight. I'd argue that last year with Giants and Washington, amongst others, we did disproportionately well. In terms of at least that, what I'd like to think is that over the coming weeks, people actually look at it and look at kind of, in particular, the players, both the Hall of Famers as well as the rising stars that are amongst the teams, because we have a sport that, because of parity, means that even if you're on less attractive teams, you have incredibly attractive players, whether that's Larry Fitzgerald, David Johnson, Joe Flacco, Terrell Suggs, even Jared Goff, right?
And with the Browns this year's number one overall pick. So look, I think that's all spot
or
on.
Or if they do Moneyball again, it might be with 16 other picks. Who knows?
So that was Alistair Kirkwood, the managing director of NFL UK, and you also heard from Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold from Sky Sports, chatting with myself and Liam Blackburn. The conversation is going to rage on, and as soon as we know more about when there's going to be dates or times announced, we'll let you know at Gridiron on Twitter, me at Will Gav, him at Ollie Hunter. You know, we will get that information disseminated as quickly as possible. Well, there's loads to talk about elsewhere in the NFL this week. Although one thing I will direct you to, gridiron-magazine.com. There's an article on there that Matt Sherry has written, making a case for all the team, for each London-bound team. And it's pretty compelling reading. So I go on there, have a read, and see why you should get excited about the London Games in 2017. Ollie, we've kind of gone straight in and talked about football. How are you, mate?
I'm all right, man. It was nice seeing you last night. You're a little tipsy, but apparently you weren't the worst of everyone at the TalkSport 2 Christmas bash. You were. I really wanted you to tell me what happened to a certain fellow who had to be ejected from the
pub. I don't want to. We talk about these things, and I'm like, yeah, let's just talk about it. But I feel genuinely bad for the guy today. So
oh wow, tell me off air then.
Yeah, it might not be one, but the long and short version of the story is that he got far too drunk. Stuff started to come out which really shouldn't have come out in a public setting. He then got a bit aggressive about that stuff, not physically, but kind of shouty and angry about it. Then he went off to the toilet, apparently got into a bit of a to do with somebody in the toilet who he didn't know, who wasn't part of our group or anything. I went to the toilet and found him, had a word with him, came back out. The manager of the pub was waiting outside the toilet to basically said, look, you need to go home, mate. I asked the manager politely if, rather than embarrass him in front of everyone, I could just see him out and take him outside and put him in a taxi, which is what I did.
Oh, you're a hero.
I don't want to claim I'm a hero.
But how much of a hero are you if you've told the story to everybody else afterwards?
And I told them all how much the taxi cost as well.
Yeah.
I was drunk. I'm sorry. But
drink responsibly, kids.
Triple B. My voice. I didn't really realise. I realised when you came here, I hadn't spoken yet today. Because, you know, I've just been in my house on my own.
Rubbish. I know you talk to your cats.
I genuinely haven't talked to my cats or anything. I lay here, I watched wrestling on Sky, and I did nothing else, basically.
Oh, your life.
But
life.
I've got to go into work tonight. I've got to do the West Ham game. It's going to be...
Where's the sad good. Music? Sorry, you're in charge of the decks.
Self-inflicted. Got to do the West Ham game tonight. Might lose my voice during it, but it's only West Ham Burnley. It's not like it's a massive game on the relegation battle or anything. But yeah, so he made a bit of a fool of himself. The key part of this story that's worth mentioning is it was 8 p.m. at this point.
Okay. Wow.
8 p.m.
Wow. Yeah.
Did you, well, you came and just met and came for a couple of pints after doing the NFL show with Nat and the guys, didn't you? So what was it like coming into that scene where you'd had people who had been there since,
well, I think
4 o'clock, drinking quite heavily? And when our manager got in a round of Jaeger bombs on the TalkSport 2 credit card at like 4:30 in the afternoon.
A round of Jaeger bombs?
You knew. Just got a text message from the aforementioned.
Oh, wow.
Thanks so much for last night, mate. You're a legend. What are your bank details and how much was the Uber?
£55.
Here's the question. Shall I go true triple B hero and be like, no, no, don't worry, mate. It's on me. Or...
I tell you what you could do. You could tell him to be paid in burritos.
And here's the other thing. I bought that guy his first ever burrito yesterday.
There we go. So you just say, listen, bud, get me... 3 or 4 or 5 burritos and we'll call it quits.
Yeah, fine.
I think that's fine. don't receive money, but receive burritos.
Always receive burritos.
Yeah, be paid in burritos.
Any fun stories from the world of Ollie Hunter from the last few days?
No.
Well, from when we did a podcast 20 hours ago?
No. nothing really.
Should we do a daily podcast from now on? Just every day, get together. And...
every day, you and I just chat.
2 hours.
Shoot the breeze. Shoot the Drew.
Good.
Thanks.
Good. In the sake of honesty, I'm peeling and eating an orange, and you're probably going to have to hear that on microphone, so I apologise for that, but I haven't eaten it today. Los Angeles Rams have fired head coach Jeff
Why haven't
Fisher.
You offered me an orange?
Well, you're welcome to an orange. There's a fruit bowl in the middle of the room. Help yourself. There's apples in there. There might be a pear as well. What's your favourite fruit?
Cherry.
Ooh.
I love cherry. I love a cherry. I love artificial cherry. I love cherry ice cream. I love cherry yogurt.
I hate it. The thing is, I love all those forms of cherry. Big cherry yogurt fan, in fact. Hate a Morello cherry.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Morello cherry. You can also get Morello cherry cordial. You know where you'd next to where you'd get like an elderflower cordial. You get a Morello. This is so middle class. I love cherry. What's your favourite fruit?
I don't know. A banana, probably. Oh, bit right. Boring, bit tappany.
Right, carry on. Jeff Fisher.
Look, we mentioned this on the show the other day. The Rams stunned the football world, I think might be a stretch, on Monday afternoon, firing long-term head coach Jeff Fisher just a few months after handing him a 2-year contract extension. It was just last week that Fisher confirmed he'd signed the deal before the start of the 2016 season. Special teams coordinator John Fassel, the sons of former Giants head coach Jim Fassel, has been named as the team's interim head coach. Jeff Fisher has issued a statement thanking Stan Kroenke for the 4.5 years, the entire football staff, all of the players, etc., etc. All of that's happened. Great. There's kind of two things to discuss here, which is where they go next, but also just how Ramsey this whole thing is.
It's so Ramsey. Jeff Fisher was a specialist in failure.
And you fired him on a Monday when you're playing a divisional rival on the Thursday night. Like, how is an interim coach going to be able to come in and make your team do anything for that
I'll
game?
I'll tell you what, though. It must... the Rams organisation, the backroom staff, they must have felt that that game against the Falcons was the last possible straw. Because they were 42-0 down. The half the stadium had gone. Probably half the stadium didn't turn up in the first place anyway. There's nowhere else you can go with Jeff Fisher. You go to Seattle, it could be even worse. Seattle are coming back off a chastening defeat out in Green Bay. So they're going to be wanting to make a statement. I feel, if anything, they've done Jeff Fisher a favour by getting rid of him now so that he doesn't have to suffer the inevitable embarrassment of going up to Seattle and getting his team getting absolutely smashed.
I apologise for that noise. That was Skype firing up, ready to record our interview with Alistair Kirkwood. Pull back the curtain, we're doing after the show. and the problem is that the Rams aren't a good football team right now, but they've got some good talent there. And their offence, Todd Gurley coming out and saying they're running a middle school offence. And basically, I mean, we spoke to Todd Gurley at the Super Bowl, and he was a cheery, lovely chappy who, okay, it was the day he was going to be winning his Rookie of the Year award and probably already knew at that point he was going to be the winner and yada, yada, yada. But he had a real vim, vigour and verve about him. You see him in interviews in the last couple of months, and Richard Graves from Sky Sports is obviously a bit of a friend of the show. He's going to be annoyed that I said bit of a friend, but there we go. He interviewed him in... Why is Liam calling me when I've just told him we're recording the podcast? So that phone call from Liam was telling me that whilst I was drunk last night, he texted me to tell me that the Alistair Kirkwood interview was half an hour earlier than we'd originally scheduled it for, and I'd forgotten that. So as you heard, as you've already heard, we got Kirkwood on the phone, but yeah, that meant we had to cut the podcast off early. And just to give you an idea of timeline, Ollie was sat in my front room 9 hours ago, 9.5 hours ago from now.
9.5 hours ago.
We're now back at TalkSport 2 in the evening. I'm about to do the West Ham game. Ollie's about to go home. And we figured, let's finish off that podcast we started doing this morning.
Let's do it. Yeah, why not? The best laid plans, eh?
We were in the middle of talking about that Jeff Fisher leaving the Rams and Todd Gurley not being happy and him, Sky Sports doing a very difficult interview with him earlier this year. And I think... The big problem, the reason I mention that is because the offense is so vanilla and so poorly run, and Jeff Fisher is a great defensive coach and has a great defensive unit there that I think when they're looking for their new head coach, we've heard Jim Harbaugh mentioned a lot. I think it would take $15 million a year to get him out of the Michigan job quite easily, but... Yeah, we've heard his name bandied about a huge amount. Former quarterback, great offensive mind, but I can't see him going. And I just think that's the way they need to look at. I think
they need a big splashy head coach to come in to ignite that LA. I know they definitely shouldn't hire someone just based on a name, but they need to get someone who's going to help ignite the way that the Rams play and the fans and the supporters in LA, because people aren't turning up to watch the Rams. I find it madness that they think two teams would work in LA.
Well, yeah, quite. But the fact is, like, the people I think would work really well, and the names I've got in mind, the name that jumps immediately to the top of my list is and it's so clear because I remember it, Kyle Shanahan, the Washington offensive coordinator, who's done such a brilliant job of designing that offense, getting the best out of Cousins, and turning that team around offensively in the last 2 years.
So you're thinking, because the pieces are already there on defense, that the offense is the thing that really needs to be looked at. It should be someone with an offensive kind of leaning.
Yeah, but the problem is I don't think it's going to get that sort of... I don't think they're going to want that sort of name. They're not going to want someone... Okay, he's got the Shanahan name, so there's something to that, but they're going to want someone who's been a Super Bowl-winning head coach or at least a contender at previous stages, and that's not what they've got at the moment.
And there's not many of them. There's not many of these guys that are around that are Super Bowl winners. You mentioned Tom Coughlin. Perhaps that could be something, or is he... Is he just too old now?
That would be my thinking on it. That would be very much an interim, appointment if it was one that came in. Just nothing. None of the names currently out there appeal to me particularly, and I think I understand why they've done it, because apparently it became quite toxic, the atmosphere, and once you've made the decision, you should probably get them out of there as soon as possible. But it's a fire. Dumpster fire, that's the phrase I'm looking for. God, I'm really, really good at radio tonight, aren't I? It's an absolute dumpster fire in LA, and I don't think that's going to change overnight. So,
is that because you're doing prep on something else right now?
Look, mate, I have to go on air in 30 minutes, and all I'm doing, I'm not doing my prep, I'm just writing my names on my team sheet, because...
Why are you writing your name?
Very good. The way I do it, look, I'll show you, I've got my little prep sheet, there's a little pitch at the top of it, and I put my teams in the formations there, and then I have my separate sheet with all my little stats on there. Details, and I have those in front of me, and I do it twice, so once for each half, so I have them on the other side so that I don't get confused.
Okay.
So I've just got to do that. It's not taking away from what I'm doing. I'm just writing names down. You know, big news for West Ham tonight. Andy Carroll back up front. The heading prowess of him and Mikel Antonio.
I'm just not interested in any way.
Right, let's move on from the Rams. A couple of other bits of news going on. Adrian Peterson, he plans to play in week 16 against the Packers. He's back in training tomorrow and is off IR as of the end of this week if he's ready to go. And so he's expected to be back for week 16 against the Packers. If they've still got a chance of hitting the playoffs and he comes back and he's in any decent form at all, oh, that's a good, tasty bit of addition for them Vikings. I don't know why I went into a weird little thing.
Listen,
there.
The Vikings' offensive line is... the offensive line is not great, but also their running back or their running game is horrendous. I think it was twice against the Jaguars this weekend where they couldn't punch the ball in within 3 yards, which is abysmal. Asiata is much better used as a passing down back when you've got someone decent like Adrian Peterson who does the north to south, the three down, the other three down stuff. Jerick McKinnon, I mean, is not that guy. He's not
it's
the guy that people
well
thought he was going to be.
Physically, he's the more impressive of the backs and actually the guy they liked more going into the season. So it's really disappointing that he's not turned into that, particularly as I got him in pretty much every bloody fantasy league or dynasty league I'm in. But there we go.
I've got him on one of my IRs. Oh, well, Jerick McKinnon. Yeah.
But there we go. So that's a nice little interesting piece of news. Jerry Jones apparently is opening the door for a Tony Romo QB switch. Now, we've not talked about the games from the weekend, and I don't know how much time we want to spend on them now, because by the time this is coming out, it's Thursday morning. People are expecting a Thursday night football preview. They're not expecting a review of the weekend. But let's just talk about a couple of more stunning results, and that... that bizarre 17-point, just ridiculously tight game between the Giants and the Cowboys, won by the massive Odell Beckham touchdown. He's the best yards after the catch receiver the NFL has seen in recent years. You know, there's shades of Jerry Rice in that catch and run on Sunday night. But the kudos for that performance, the reason it was so impressive from all sides up, was the Giants' defense. I thought with JPP going out, I thought they were really going to struggle against the run. They did give up over 100 yards, but Dak Prescott, through two interceptions, had his most average game of his entire time. And just all in all, they were a really impressive unit. And I hold my hands up. I was slating the Giants and saying that I thought they were going to fall back to 8-8. If the defense can play like that for the last few weeks, they could easily be a playoff team. I think better teams will beat them, but they could easily be a playoff team.
Well, with Janoris Jenkins, who has been lights out so far this season, Olivier Vernon, who's been brilliant, even when JPP's gone out, that Giants defense is really good. I called it that they would win that game, and I think they're going to pose more teams a lot of problems and a lot of questions, and especially when they play the Lions. I'm hoping for a win there in a couple of weeks' time.
So I think my point is that if I'm the Cowboys, I'm not panicking and thinking of making any switches or anything like that right now. And I don't think anyone is at that stage. But I would just be careful and aware of people. Just be kind of wary of the possibility of them trying to call for that change. And if he continues to perform that poorly over the next couple of weeks, then certainly I would see the calls increasing towards week 17, the first week of the playoffs after the bye, because they're pretty much guaranteed the bye at this point, that maybe there would be more calls for Dak Prescott.
I think when you look at it, there is a precedence for an old hand, an old stager, to come back in and take a team to a Super Bowl and win it, and that happened last year. Peyton Manning went out injured, Brock Osweiler came back in, did okay, but when he started to flounder and people realised that he's Brock Osweiler, Peyton Manning came back in. Now, teams have been looking at Dak for 11, 12 weeks now, or 13, 14 weeks, and they will have worked out how to play him. The Giants did. I think if he has another game, another bad game, and it's against the Buccaneers, so the Bucs have got a very, very good defence at the moment. If another bad game happens, and if they lose, they may even win, but Dak has a bad game, I wouldn't be surprised to see Tony Romo come back in. Tony Romo's fresh.
It would make for, if they went on and won the Super Bowl, it would make for a great America's game, wouldn't it?
Great America's game.
And then he can ride off into the sunset at the top of his game.
Exactly.
All
exactly.
that nonsense. Just having a look. The other games, because we haven't done a review of the weekend, we probably shouldn't bother at this point, because I think everyone's heard what everyone had to say. But just a couple of other games that caught the eye. Monday Night Football. Final scoreline 30-23 to the New England Patriots over the Baltimore Ravens. But it was the most bizarre game because the Patriots dominated the Ravens. And that brilliant Ravens defense that we've been raving about all season, they used a lot of three wide sets because they didn't have, obviously, Rob Gronkowski, but Bennett had a really big game. Hogan had a huge game. Their backfield looks really impressive. I think it's up there as the best backfields they've had in certainly in the recent years of the Patriots franchise. And I do I think that right now it's terrifying that when if Gronkowski would be out of the lineup, we'd all see a really big drop-off in the offense, and we'd be talking about the drop-off in the stats. There's just not going to be a drop-off this time by the looks of it. And
There wasn't at the beginning of the season when Gronkowski was not in the lineup, but Martellus Bennett is filling that gap really well. You've got the two running backs who kind of work as receivers, or one of them at least works as receivers, Lewis and James White.
James White. I've been expecting Dion Lewis to come in and take over that role, and James White was fantastic.
Exactly.
Against the Ravens on Monday.
They've got a very good running back in LeGarrette Blount. Those two wideouts in Hogan and Mitchell, you've got Incredible there as well. Saddens me, but the Patriots probably have the best and most balanced offense in the league right now.
Finally, the other game I really wanted to talk about. There's loads of stuff we could revisit.
There's one game. If you don't mention it, I will probably quit.
But looking forward to Thursday Night Football. No, wait. Looking forward to Thursday Night Football, where the Los Angeles Rams take on the Seattle Seahawks.
Okay, good.
Great defense. Change your head coach. Maybe that'll give them a boost. And we've just watched the Seahawks get absolutely tonked in the snow.
Where it didn't snow.
Have you finally got round to listening to the Peter King podcast I've been recommending to you all season?
No.
Because this week's guest is Mike McCarthy the evening after.
No
literally,
way.
Literally in his office after they've just hammered the Seahawks at home, and it's a great interview.
Right, I will download that and listen to it on my way home.
And what was fascinating about it was him talking, like Peter King just said, look, I thought watching the games that there was an issue with Aaron Rodgers in terms of I thought that he was throwing off the front foot. He was throwing off the front foot. Off the back foot. Sorry, he wasn't getting in the right stances. He wasn't. You know, it was like he was panicking on plays or trying to break plays down. And he basically said that, what did you do to fix that issue? And it was interesting to hear from. Obviously, McCarthy stuck up for his guy. We've heard that time and time again.
And you'd expect nothing else.
McCarthy stuck up for his guy, obviously. But he took the blame on his shoulders and he said, actually, and it's something I've not really paid as much attention to with the Packers, because you think of them as a really good no-huddle offense. But he said, end of last year, going into this year, when we've had those problems, we changed and we started doing much more no-huddle stuff. And it meant you couldn't have the change of formations. I mean, you couldn't have the change of personnel. And he was saying that it was almost the change of the running back and needing to bring Tyson Montgomery into the game in different ways that forced them to do much more straight, old-fashioned offense, getting in a huddle, calling plays. And he thinks that's made a huge difference to how the offense is running, because even though Rodgers still makes changes at the line and still makes audibles, it just gives them that extra little bit of time.
It's a little less frantic, isn't it?
And don't get me wrong, I'm a big exponent of no huddle, and I love it when it works well. I think it's one of the most exciting things to watch in football. If you can get a defense huffing and puffing, it's fantastic. But do you know what? He's got a very good point, and it's been working. So, I'm incredibly impressed by the Packers at the weekend. They now have a run of games where they play all of the NFC North in the next 3 weeks to see off the division, try and close that gap on the Lions. And they really could run the table. They actually could. I saw it as a joke 3 weeks ago when Aaron Rodgers said that. I'm starting to feel like it's no joke.
Well, it's the Bears next. Then it's the Vikings at home. That Vikings at home game is a win or bust for both teams. Mm-hmm. And then it's the win or bust against the Lions, because the Lions, you'd expect to lose at least one of their next two, which is Giants and Cowboys. So it's suddenly from a shocking division and not knowing what's going to happen about 4 or 5 weeks ago, turning into one of the most exciting finishes in football. I'm loving it. I'm nervous to hell, but I'm loving it. And I think Green Bay are starting to feel like that 2014 side that got to the NFC Championship game.
On the Seahawks side of it, we just talked about an offensive player going out and making no real difference for the Packers, but you know, they lose their superstar safety, and we talked about if there's a defense that can cover that up, I would have thought it was the Seahawks. But they gave up the highest passer rating that the Seahawks have given up all season. And the Green Bay defense were very impressive. 5 picks off Russell Wilson was a career high.
A couple of those were really lucky. I mean, one coming off the back of a defensive back's shoulder, another, a couple of tipped ones. So it's not totally all on Wilson.
But he didn't
have a good game.
But the point is, for me, there were tipped passes, there were not caught balls, there were drops, and everyone wants to give Doug Baldwin a lot of love and make out like he's a top 10 wide receiver because he goes through these patches where he scores 8 touchdowns in 6 or 7 games. But I really think that you're seeing that when Wilson's struggling, it's not like when you've got Julio Jones there, Antonio Brown there, someone who is in that really top echelon who covers your mistakes for you. He makes mistakes himself, and he doesn't cover. And Russell Wilson basically makes them look really good. And I still don't put Doug Baldwin right up in that very top tier. And I think they struggled. Jimmy Graham, after being brilliant at the start of the year, really has dipped off quite a bit in recent weeks. So both sides of the ball, they really weren't impressive against the Packers. And, OK, we've said this season that they tend to have these games occasionally, but they've now had these games against Tampa Bay, against Green Bay. I mean, it's teams with Bay in their name. And there was at least one or two other this season where they've really dropped a bollock. And it makes... I just fear... I feel like Packers-Cowboys could be the playoff game that decides the NFC title holder, even if it's not the NFC Championship game based on seeding. Because those are the two teams in the NFC right now that I go, whoa, they're impressive.
Well, the Packers are starting to peak at the right time. There's a case for the Cowboys peaking a little too early. With the Seahawks, every time you think that they're going to peak, like you say, they drop a bollock. They drop off. I texted Greg Rosenthal, or I tweeted, I think, saying that the Seahawks, if you look streaky up in the dictionary, you've got the Seahawks. And he came back to me and said, look, there's enough talent on that roster that I don't agree with that statement. I think you've got to stand by it, because every time that you expect the Seahawks to get over that hump and to push on, something crashes them back down to earth. You mentioned the Tampa Bay. There was the tie in Arizona. It's happened time and time again that they just haven't managed to put a string of results, more than three results together, and it's happened again. I worry for the Seahawks.
But at the same time, they're at home on a Thursday night in the clink against a bad team who have just fired their head coach. Of course, on Thursday night football, I'm picking the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, as am I. But actually, the Seahawks haven't beaten the Rams for 3 times in a row. The Rams always play hard when it comes to divisional games. So this isn't as cut and dry as everyone will make out.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a revenge game for Seattle as well after that acute hammering in LA earlier in the year. But Ollie, I'm glad we finally got this done. It's been a joy. Check out Touchdown Trips online, touchdowntrips.com. Go to Facebook Touchdown Trips or Twitter Touchdown Trips. We've talked a lot about the games in the US. We've heard from Alistair. We've heard again from Neil and Jeff in this series. We know, or are expecting, that Mexico is going to announce a huge matchup this year. And we'll discuss that on the next later in the week show, because some people are angry that they're getting such a great game. I think when it's announced, we'll give our views on that. I have some views. They are angry, but they're not angry at the NFL. Just all in all, Touchdown Trips, Ben is a great guy. If you're going to go out to the US, there's no better company to go and do it with, because he tailors your trip to make sure to save you money at getting you in the game. That's the slogan. It always reminds me of EA, though. Maybe I'll get the EA. It's in the game. Do you remember from the old
Get you in the game. Yeah.
Top stuff. Ollie.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
I do have a final thought.
Oh, so because you know I've got to be downstairs to do my work.
Yeah, no. But this is great. This final thought. So earlier on in the pod, a long time ago, we were talking about the guy who got a little drunk. I saw him today.
He sent me 4 text messages today, apologising, then thanking me, then telling me how horrible work is, then thanking me again.
I saw him today. I laughed at him.
Yeah.
But I saw that he's pretty much an embarrassed, broken man.
Oh, birdie.
So I gave him a little cuddle and I said, listen, man, we've all been there.
That's it.
Don't worry.
The guy is young. He's never been to university. He hasn't gone through these. We've all done this stupid stuff when we've been on nights out with work and with uni mates or whatever.
It's not the end of the world.
I will be doing the same when I next see him.
It's funny. I said, listen, you're a good guy. Don't worry about it.
We're going to do something rather special and rather different here, Ollie.
Hmm?
Normally we finish our later in the week podcast on this, but it's Wednesday night. It's already dropped into my inbox. So let's get a bit of Neil Dutton and some Fantasy Darlings.
History is replete with examples of when facing overwhelming odds and a grim situation, an unlikely hero emerges and ensures that the powers of good triumph over the forces of evil. It was R2-D2, for instance, who held the Death Star plans. And just think how early on the quest to destroy the One Ring would have ended if not for Hobbiton gardener Samwise Gamgee. In one of the biggest spots in fantasy football this season, Matt Barkley could be another such hero. Since coming into the Bears lineup, he's completing only 54.6% of his passes, but he does get Alshon Jeffrey back this week after his 4-week suspension. Together, these two, and 44 other players, lock horns with the Green Bay Packers. The Pack have allowed 24 passing scores this season, and have seen 8 quarterbacks throw for at least 250 yards in a game, and 7 throw for multiple scores. If you survive this far without a stud at the quarterback spot, why not trust in Barkley? The reigning MVP of the NFL, Cam Newton, is probably not the main reason your team made the fantasy playoffs. His 2016 season has been as disappointing as the 2015 campaign was breathtaking. He has passed for multiple touchdowns in a game just twice since week 2, and over his last 4 games he has just 780 yards passing, completing a paltry slash pathetic 43% of his passes. If you can avoid starting Newton this week, I seriously recommend doing so. The Washington Redskins have allowed just 18 passing scores this season, and despite allowing 6 300-yard passes, Newton's regression makes this a much scarier prospect than it should be. It's a sad state of affairs when I trust a Joe Barry-led off defence over Cam Newton, but just like Cam's wardrobe choices, it's an ugly situation that he's brought on himself. Fantasy football production, much like life itself, is all about opportunity. Kenneth Farrow finds himself with a great opportunity to make a name for himself in the dying stages of the 2016 season as the likely replacement for the injured Melvin Gordon. After Gordon went down against the Panthers, Farrow slipped into the mail carrier role for the Chargers, logging 16 carries for 55 yards while also snaring 6 of 6 targets. The Chargers take on the Raiders in the will be a bigger draw in LA than the Rams Bowl on Sunday, and the Raiders have been most benevolent towards fantasy running backs this year. They're allowing 4.6 yards per carry to tailbacks, with 10 players rushing for at least 50 yards against them this season. Spencer Ware has done it twice, but more on him later, whilst also allowing 12 rushing scores. This is an ideal chance for me as lad to make his mum proud. You may want to fact check this, as I cannot say for certain that Kenneth Farrow is in any way related to Mia Farrow, but you never know. For stretches of the 2016 season, Spencer Ware has played the role of fantasy darling with aplomb, admirably filling the fantasy void left by Jamaal Charles, but the sparkle is beginning to come off. He has 1 rushing score in his last 7 games, and hasn't topped 77 rushing yards in any of these contests. He's also failed to top 3 yards per carry in his last 3, with his last 51 totes garnering a meagre 149 yards. That's 2.9 yards per carry. The Titans, against whom Ware and the Chiefs go up against this week, have shut down the run this season. They've allowed the 5th fewest rushing yards to running backs, given up just 5 rushing scores, and allowed only 2 players to rush for more than 50 yards in a game since week 10. Chasing last week's fantasy points is never a recipe for success, but chasing fantasy points from 8 weeks ago is a surefire way to lose your matchup. Thank Ware for getting you to the dance this season, give him a painting with Spitfire and let him go. With Le'Veon Bell a good bet to go off any time he gets the ball, and more chance of Adele releasing a feel-good anthem that gladdens the soul than Antonio Brown not getting at least 5 catches a game, you would think there may not be enough footballs to go round for the Steelers. While this is true to an extent, they have become adept at exploiting matchups and situations. With the Bengals allowing the third most fantasy points per game to tight ends in 2016, they may see a lot of Ladarius Green. In his last 5 games, he's only played 12, 8, 14, 35 and 28 snaps, but has seen 4, 2, 3, 11 and 6 targets. When he's on the field, the Steelers make use of him. The Bengals have given up an average of 6 receptions a game to tight ends this season, and with the Steelers' main tight end, Jesse James' fantasy appeal going down in flames, just like Jesse James, Green could give you that extra edge when you need it most. After being sat down after just 3 carries due to fumbling issues against the Seahawks, Mark Ingram has not seen less than 7 carries in a game since, and indeed has exactly 7 totes in 3 of his last 4 games. These 21 carries have seen him rack up a ghastly 79 yards with 0 touchdowns. Granted, a 14-carry, 146-yard day against the Rams came in the midst of this span, but this is looking more like the outlier than the norm. The Saints take on the Arizona Cardinals, who, after shutting down London-born Jay Ajayi last week, will look to ensure Ingram is similarly kept quiet. The Cards have allowed just 1 100-yard rusher this season and have not seen a single back go for more than 63 yards since Week 6. The Saints, and this one in particular, will not go marching in.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.